What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says jambalaya and a crawfish pie and a filet gumbo. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And today...
You're hungry.
Well,
I am hungry.
I'm pretty much always hungry.
I ate too early today, and now I am hungry.
It's my secret. I'm always hungry.
So today for lunch, I went to a local, what would you call it, shrine?
Yeah.
A local establishment called Eats.
It's a southern cafeteria.
Uh-huh. It's called Eats, the sign for which I always think, I don't think anybody agrees with me, but to me, the sign for Eats looks like it says Ents. So I call it Ents.
So a lunch there can last upwards of 10 years.
It really could. It could be in your body that long.
Yeah. Joe decided to be adventurous and try something that he doesn't normally try.
Yeah, well, I didn't like my new dishes as much today as I like their standard like jerk chicken, which is pretty good.
They're really known for it.
But it is definitely always worth being a little adventurous in the kitchen, trying something new.
Yeah, and another thing we wanted to mention, the new thing is going to become really important later on, and it gets weird, y'all. But before we get there, the other thing I wanted to mention is that the kitchen has for a really long time been kind of a gateway to technology in the home.
Yeah. People are very technologically adventurous in the kitchen as well as food-wise.
Yeah, I think I even was looking around and the reason why whenever CES rolls around, that used to be known as the Consumer Electronics Showcase, but now it's just CES. There's always a huge number of various appliances and inventions that are kitchen-oriented. And it's largely because when it comes to technology, we tend to adopt it for the kitchen pretty early. People love kitchen gadgets.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, late-night TV filled with various kitchen gadgets of questionable quality, many of which I own. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how the kitchen is kind of this gateway to home automation and programmable appliances before we get into the concept of robot chefs and AI getting involved in our food, just to kind of illustrate how it's been changing even just recently.
Oh, sure. We take all of these automated kitchen devices very much for granted these days. You know, your coffee maker that you can program to go off whenever you want coffee in anticipation of when you're going to want coffee. But
which is always.
But getting to this point has been kind of rocky.
Yeah.
The very first computer that was built for the kitchen was, okay, to be fair, more of a marketing ploy than it was a real product. But this was in 1969, and at the time, even Jane Jetson's kitchen still ran on punch cards. So to stir up publicity, retailer Neiman Marcus paired up with technology innovator Honeywell to promote a kitchen computer, which would plan menus for you based around a single main course. Mm-hmm. It also weighed about 100 pounds and was so large that it came in the form of like a small kitchen island with a cutting board and everything. It was really a repackaged Honeywell 316, which was a 16-bit mini computer. By mini computer, they meant smaller than a room at the time.
Yeah.
And these things were commonly used in like commercial and industrial applications. So It was so complex to use that the companies offered a complimentary 2-week programming course to potential buyers.
Wow.
It had no screen. It was just like a flashing light display that communicated in binary code. So only 20 were ever produced, and those only after public interest was way higher than they anticipated. It was like, hey, talk about this thing that we might possibly do.
Yeah, to be fair, now this is an era where people were really looking forward, like the home of the future, right?
Yeah.
This idea of everything is going to be easier from now on because it's all going to be automated. This is still a story we're telling today.
Oh, sure.
But it's obviously taken a lot longer than what we anticipated. So I'm curious, if back in those days I wanted one of these miraculous machines to grace my kitchen, how much might I be expected to pay for such a thing?
Well, it was priced at $10,600.
Wow.
Wow, yes. But when you account for inflation, in today's dollars, that is worth $68,925.
So for the price of just a couple of automobiles.
Yeah, it's unlikely that any were ever sold.
Gotcha. Wow. That is pretty amazing. But, you know, obviously that was not just the beginning and the end of this, you know, trend in trying to create automated devices for the kitchen.
Oh, sure. It would take the level of miniaturization and the level of internet access that came along in the late 80s and early 90s to really kick off the creation of inexpensive and actually marketable devices that do not talk to you in binary code.
Right.
The first touchscreen fridge, for example, debuted in 1999 from Electrolux. And basically after that, we've been living in a rush of kitchen tech.
You know, I feel like crowdfunding websites are just chock full of kitchen gadgets that people are trying to fund.
Like immersion cookers, that kind of thing. I mean, I remember seeing that like for sous vide type approach. Mm-hmm. I've been seeing those crowdfunded for a while, but all sorts of kitchen gadgets are up there. And I mean, I think of like when you're thinking about the history of automation in the kitchen, things like dishwashers obviously spring to mind, and coffee makers, like we were saying earlier, and also things like bread makers. I mean, I remember when bread makers became a thing.
Yeah, my parents got one when I was a kid, and I remember it being an extremely long, laborious process to make even with the bread maker.
But if you were doing something like putting the ingredients in the morning and starting it off and then just letting it go, then by evening you had a fresh baked loaf of bread. The house smelled of bread. This was a miracle machine as far as I was concerned, because my mom makes amazing homemade bread, but because doing it by hand is even more laborious than using a bread maker.
Oh, yeah.
It was so infrequent that this meant that we actually got to have it more often, which in my mind was amazing. Yeah. So some of the things I wanted to mention before we get into the robot stuff, just some more examples of technology that's becoming available now, stuff that
just general automated cooking gadgets.
Yeah, things that have debuted at CES recently, that kind of stuff. One was the Rodimatic. I love the name already, but it's an automatic roti cooker. So you can get...
Like R-O-T-I.
R-O-T-I, yeah.
The Indian pancake type thing.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you just load the ingredients. They have these different canisters that hold the various ingredients so that they mix them in the proper proportions. And you then set it, and it cooks about one per minute. So if I had more room in my kitchen, I would get one of these because I think that is amazing.
Yeah.
But I think my wife would kill me. I'm the cook in our family, by the way, so to me, like, these are the things that appeal to me, and then mm-hmm. I think I don't have physical space for it, so it's hard for me to justify purchasing it. The Smarter Coffee Maker, this is one of those things that you wouldn't really think you needed until you see it, and then you think,
seven of them.
Yeah.
I don't understand the appeal. What's the deal?
So the Smarter Coffee Maker goes beyond programming. Like, you know, we're used to the programmable coffee makers at this point. If you have one of those, then you can, you know, you load it up and you say, all right, at 6:30 in the morning, start brewing my cup of coffee so that way I have it as soon as I get up mm-hmm. and come downstairs or whatever. The Smarter Coffee Maker goes beyond that. You can actually access it through an app. So you use your app to tell your coffee maker exactly how much coffee you want to make. So if you want a big cup of coffee, you say use this much water versus that much water. It also will keep track of how many beans are still in the coffee maker. So when it gets low, you can reload it, add more beans to it. So kind of an Internet of Things approach to making coffee. There was the XYZ printing 3D food printer, which was shown at CES, that was capable of using sweets or cookie dough and printing it in different shapes. So not quite the 3D printer that makes a pizza, but one that could make, you know, Christmas cookies if you wanted, or whatever shape cookies you wanted. I don't know how many people would actually get one of those. Again, like, my immediate response is, I totally don't need that, but I totally kind of want one. There was the Pico Brew Zymatic, which is an automated beer brewing device. Takes four hours to brew an unfermented beer.
I saw your note on this, and I was like,
unfermented?
Unfermented
Isn't
beer.
Isn't fermentation the point of beer?
Yeah, it is. No, so the unfermented beer is not what you drink.
No.
So it'll make this, and then you can ferment it.
Right.
And then you can have beer.
Oh, okay.
Because I was thinking, what would that be like? I'm sure it would be gross. I don't think they're suggesting you drink it at this stage.
No.
Unfermented beer is called wort with an O. Wort? I don't know how you say it. I guess it's
you're
just wort.
You're saying it like one of the grunts from Halo.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like wort.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Not a Halo player. No. Anyway, but it's this sugary grain-based liquid that becomes beer through the process of fermentation.
Right. So this would be something that would speed up that process and automate it so that you don't have to have the same level of you don't have to babysit it as much, right? That's the big thing until you get to the fermentation stage, which obviously would go outside of this device.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit about it, and it said that the main appeal of this thing is if you want to be able to experiment with a lot of different recipes with very precise measurements.
Yeah. Also, it appeals to people who live in a place where they might not have a lot of space to do this kind of stuff on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So people who might live in an apartment or a townhouse where they don't have like a big garage or something, it was very appealing for those folks as well. Whirlpool went bonkers at CES and showed off a fully interconnected kitchen with all the different appliances able to talk to all the other different appliances. It even included an interactive backsplash so you could get like recipes printed on your backsplash while you're working on stuff, and cooktops that could actually link to your social media profiles. So if you wanted to take the step out of tweeting what it is you're having for dinner.
Jonathan Strickland is using medium high heat.
Exactly. I can't say that I immediately recognize the appeal, but it certainly was built into it.
Well, people are very fond of, you know, posting their dinner.
That's
on
true.
Social media.
That's
so
true.
And you know, if you're doing that three times a day every day, it just wears out your typing thumb.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like people are more fond of posting their brunch or lunch rather than dinner. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think it depends on where you're eating. If you're eating at home,
like weekend brunch or lunch.
I'm sure there's statistics out there for this.
Yeah.
Big data, get back to us.
Yeah, I think it probably also would give you an indication of how well someone's date is going.
Yeah.
You know, based upon the number and frequency of food-related tweets you see from that person.
Okay, Jonathan, sorry. Everything you've said so far, I'm unimpressed. Right. I want a robot or cyborg-type organism or machine that cooks for me.
Well, I have some good news for you, Joe. There are top people. I always want to say top men because that's the Raiders quote, yeah. But come on, let's be fair.
Yeah.
There are top, in fact, one of the people who is behind one of the robot chefs I'm going to talk about is an 18-year-old lady, and she really impressed me because I got to meet her in person on an airplane on the way to CES.
Oh, cool.
But so why don't we have robot cooks?
Well... I mean, that could be asked about almost anything. Where
like,
we don't
why don't we have robot butlers?
Yeah, well, why don't we? I mean, that's a good question. And the answer is actually, I think, fairly similar because these jobs require all kinds of versatility of movement and recognition, you know, multiple different types of artificial intelligence converging on a task that can become pretty intuitive to us. But think about all the different types of AI it needs. It needs spatial awareness and manipulating objects and visually recognizing things and understanding what tastes are. I mean,
a lot of manual dexterity.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is incredibly complicated, but that hasn't stopped various people from trying to create types of robots that would help with cooking. So, you know, we've already talked about some automated devices that are, you could think of them almost like robots, and they certainly have some functions that are similar to robotic functions, but they're very, very specific in the tasks they can do, which not a big surprise, right? Because when we talk about robots, that tends to be the case. We talk about people designing robots for very specific tasks. That's way easier than designing a robot for general tasks. So one of those companies is called Serenity Kitchen. Serenity is spelled S-E-R-E-N-E-T-I.
Yeah, looks like Serengeti.
Yeah, yeah. I keep wanting calling it a Serenity Kitchen, but Serenity Kitchen. This is the group that I got to meet on an airplane trip to CES. I was flying in the very back of a plane, and the row immediately ahead of me were the people from Serenity Kitchen, which it was three young students. One of whom was the person who came up with the idea. She was the brains behind the concept.
Cool.
And it was a brilliant concept. So the basic idea was that you have essentially a cooking surface and a robotic arm mounted above the cooking surface. And the robotic arm could create a stirring motion to stir whatever was in a pan that's on top of that cooking surface. Mm-hmm. So you would put ingredients into the pan. The robot arm would continuously stir it until the food is done. And that way you wouldn't have to babysit
stand
the food.
There and yeah. stir. Yeah, yeah. Oh, just the application for making a roux.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Yeah, something
or
like that would be
or,
incredibly. Now, they were looking, they were actually using it to show off things like pad thai. They were showing a lot of Eastern dishes. And they said, well, we also have applied this for Western dishes, like, you know, if you wanted to make a spaghetti or whatever. And they said, really, the first target audience we're looking at are college students, people who would maybe go and buy a cheap microwave dinner, which typically doesn't taste very good and usually isn't very good for you. Mm-hmm. So what if you could create a device that would make the healthy food for you? You know, you just dump the ingredients into whatever and it would do the rest of the work because college students are lazy, and it would allow them to not have to put forth that kind of effort, and they would get the benefit of a healthy dinner cooked for them. And the brilliant part of their approach was that their plan wasn't to sell expensive robot cooks. They were actually looking at using the robot cook as sort of a lost leader, the same way that a lot of video game consoles come out.
That's immediately what I thought of. Like that they, you know, they're not making a lot of money selling you a PlayStation 4 or something. They're hoping that they're going to make it back in you buying games.
Mm-hmm. Right. So instead of games, we're talking about meals. So they actually compared it to Keurig, which makes sense, the coffee maker that uses the little pods. They said, well, you know, you could buy this device, if you wanted to buy it outright, you could, but that would cost somewhere around the neighborhood of $599. It's pretty expensive, you know, for something that would not be a direct replacement for a large appliance in your kitchen. But they had a subscription plan where you could subscribe to a service that would send you the ingredients for 10 meals a month for 3 years. So it's a 3-year commitment. And then the robot would cost just $99. The subscription would be $50 a month. And that sounds like a lot at first, but then when you figure, wait, it's 10 meals in a month, that's $5 a meal. That's a fast food meal right there.
Sure.
But you're getting fresh ingredients. Mm-hmm. So the idea being that, this would be a way to get people locked into a system where they would get the delivery 10 meals a month. They'd be able to use this. They could use it for other things too, if they had the ingredients on hand, but these would be things the robot would be specifically programmed to handle. So you'd put the ingredients in, either directly in the pan, or their actual plan has a robot that would have trays, and mm-hmm. you would put the ingredients into the individual trays, according to the directions of the recipe. And then the robot would add the ingredients mm-hmm. as needed in the process of making that recipe.
After 2 minutes of sautéing the onions, then you put in the carrots, and then you put in the meat, and then et cetera.
Right, exactly, yeah. So that way you cook the various ingredients the right amount of time so that it's the right consistency, texture, nutritional value, all that kind of stuff. And I thought this was brilliant. I thought that their business plan really appealed to me because you could tell they got it. It was a very innovative approach, not just, hey, we'll sell them the equipment, more like, hey, we'll sell the equipment at a big discount, but we'll really make the money on the food part. And as long as the food is good and the robot does what it's supposed to do, then that's a great business plan. So if you look at the images of what it actually, the working model they brought to CES, what it looked like, and then you look at the mock-ups of what they want it to look like when it's an actual consumer product, it's miles apart, but that makes sense because it's a prototype versus what would be the finished product. But, they did launch an Indiegogo campaign, which they ended early. I think they ended it after 4 days. And the reason they did was they said they got a lot of feedback that they thought was helpful and they wanted to incorporate in the design, but they didn't feel like continuing with the Indiegogo campaign would reflect that. So they ended it and said, we're going to come back in a few months with a new design based upon the feedback we're receiving.
Mm-hmm.
They also were talking about that it would be great in the future if the robot could do more than just, it's essentially just adding ingredients and stirring. If it could do more than that, like do more of the prep work,
do butchering.
Yeah. So I was thinking mainly.
They can debone a fish,
Or maybe even something a little more simple, like being able to flip over an omelet or something, as opposed to just stirring. So that was really interesting to me. And like I said, I was really impressed by their ingenuity, and really their business plan. It was beyond just the technology, which was already interesting. But the idea that they were like, well, convincing people to buy an expensive robot is kind of a no-win approach. Like unless you are just, determined to go after a very niche audience, you're not really going to make a lot of sales that way. But then we can look at a different one, a different approach that doesn't really concern itself too much with making affordable robots.
Yeah. Let's say that we are still, or that Joe at the very least, is still deeply unimpressed with this entire plan.
Like he needs something that's going to do way more work than just stirring the food. And he says, those kids over at Serenity, they're great and all, but I need a heavy duty robo chef, not just a cook. I need a chef.
I want arms that operate on a rail above the stove and counter.
Well, I have news for you, my friend. Moly Robotics, that's a London-based company that created a robo chef. It's more advanced than the Cookie concept. Cookie, by the way, is the name of the robot from Serenity Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually incorporates learning algorithms, or at least the end product is supposed to. Meaning that you can show the robot how to make something, and then it will then be able to make it, repeat that process and make that thing for you in the future.
Yeah, so I watched a demonstration video of this robot I think it was making some crab bisque. I'm not positive, but that's the impression I got, because they mentioned crab bisque and the soup looked kind of bisquey.
It took a fresh crab and cracked it over the pot.
Right, yeah. Crack in 2 fresh crabs. Yeah, exactly. No, but it was kind of like it was a pair of arms that are hooked to a rail over the stove area. And
cutting board area, yeah.
Yeah. Moving back and forth, grabbing ingredients, pouring them into the pot, stirring them up, adding things.
But how does it learn how to do all of this?
Well, the funny thing is it doesn't have any idea what the heck it's doing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, when it grabs the olive oil and adds that to the pot, if you were to put a bottle of arsenic where the olive oil is, it would just add that all the same. It learns based on basically spatial memory.
Right.
From observing a human do the same actions.
Which means that you have to place the ingredients in the same spots as when you taught the robot how to do this thing.
Sure. And it could be slightly less catastrophic than arsenic
right.
versus olive oil.
It could
be
vinegar.
As simple as vinegar yeah. versus olive oil, sure.
Yeah, that would make the taste of the dish quite different.
Yeah.
And also
and
for
the cooking patterns. Yes.
The ingredients you would use, you might put in very special containers that are specific mm-hmm. sizes, and shapes. And that would allow the robot to know, all right, the thing that's in the round container that's 3 inches tall goes in next. Then mm-hmm. the squarish container that's 4 inches tall, that gets added after that. Like it has, it's like a program. It follows a specific set of steps. And you can show it what steps it has to follow, but you then have to set everything up exactly the same way so it can follow those steps. It can't just take raw ingredients that are piled in on the kitchen counter mm-hmm. and then chop them up.
Figure
and
out what to
in.
Do with them. Yeah, yeah, but it's still pretty cool because once you show it how to create a recipe, it can remember that forever.
And it can create that recipe without any variation. Like mm-hmm. it could be perfectly consistent. So you could see how something like this would be incredibly useful in a restaurant environment.
Yeah, where your goal is to do it the same every time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. you want the dishes to be as consistent as possible. You don't want there to be a lot of variation unless there's, you know, a request from a customer saying, you know, I'm allergic to such yeah. and such. Don't
can
put that
in there.
Can you
please replace my olive oil with
vinegar.
Vinegar,
yeah. yeah. When you're, you know, that person. So the...
oh, man, what a great curdled bisque that was.
So ooh. One of the big challenges they had was creating hands that would mimic the utility of a human hand because...
Yeah, I bet.
They're
I
pretty mean, complex.
That's still a robotics problem. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's tough. And they did a pretty good job. They said that they had almost all the same degrees of freedom of movement that a human hand has. They said that really the only part of a human hand that they didn't replicate for the purposes of this robot was the ability to kind of not dislocate, but to shift your thumb over and, you know,
huh.
like
okay.
That one they said wasn't necessary for them to be able to hold on to the various implements. And they use the exact same type of kitchen utensils that we humans would use, like a ladle or a spoon or whatever. Those can be hung up and the robot can recognize which ones are which and grab the appropriate one at any given point of the recipe. but they said it was really tough.
I'm sorry, I'm just imagining a scene in a movie where somebody has one of these in their house and they get murdered because somebody comes in and teaches the robot how to stab.
Let's hope that would be against its protocol. Like I would say, I'm sorry, that's against my law of cooks, robotics division.
Yeah.
So it also can't sense some of the more delicate processes that are involved in cooking, things that have some variability to them.
Yeah.
And the example that they gave, which I thought was a great example, was if you want to beat eggs so that they start to peak.
Yeah. Like egg whites.
Yeah, egg whites. Yeah. Like if you're trying to get to a meringue or something like mm-hmm. that, and you're beating these egg whites, sometimes it takes a little longer than other times. Like it can depend upon the, you know, whatever eggs you got at whatever time of year.
The temperature of the bowl and of the eggs and the humidity in the room.
Yeah. So these variables may be difficult for a robot to sense initially. So that would mean the robot would not necessarily have the ability to predict how long it would take to get to the right point. So for something like that, you would need to build in other elements for the robot to be able to sense when it needed to stop.
Like the resistance of the whisk going through.
Yeah.
The
or
product,
it or... may, it may be as simple as some stereoscopic cameras that can get a good visual, idea of what's going on, or the resistance sensors. It might be a combination, probably would be mm-hmm. to try and increase the accuracy as much as possible. Although
peaks are 90% stiff.
You have to, you know, you have to balance the accuracy versus the cost that it adds to the overall device, obviously. But yeah, that's one of those things where that would, they hope to have that built into future versions of this. The BBC covered this RoboChef in a story and mentioned that it was being trained by Tim Anderson.
Oh.
Who was a BBC MasterChef champion in 2011.
Man, I want to be a cooking robot.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you learn from Tim Anderson?
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
I keep wanting to call him Master Chief instead of Master Chef. I see Master Chef and I'm like, he's Master Chief.
this is the most Halo-centric cooking episode, I think, that has ever been recorded by anyone.
Ideally, you would end up getting this very consistent result. So it might not be the most exciting thing for a home chef, like a home cook, unless you just, you know, there's this one dish that you love and you love, you know, how it's made every time, then obviously that would be desirable to you. But some people say, well, it kind of takes the experimentation part out of cooking. And so it really depends upon your approach to cooking in the first place. Some people take a more Alton Brown kind of chemist approach and physics-based approach, and some people are a little more...
We call them bakers.
Yeah, some people are a little more loosey-goosey. We call them me. And I don't bake well because I'm a little too loosey-goosey with the rules, and that does not work in baking.
No.
Do you not own a scale?
I do own a scale, actually. I don't use it.
Some people were really bad at potions or chemistry, depending on which universe you live in, and some, you know.
Yeah, I was.
That was always my strong point. I'm in fact a baker.
Great in charms, but terrible in potions. So they want to develop this further. They want to make the finished consumer version smaller. It's a larger form factor than they would prefer right now to try and put on a consumer market. And they also want to incorporate other things in the robot itself, like a small refrigerator and a dishwasher. So it would actually replace certain things in your home and therefore maybe justify the incredibly expensive price tag. So the BBC says the estimated price will be around £10,000 or $15,600 US for the cheap version.
Oof.
The expensive version would be closer to $72,000.
Oh, wow.
More expensive than the Honeywell computer.
Yeah, I was about to say. We're getting right back into Honeywell territory. Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah, so this would not necessarily be something your average home would have incorporated into the kitchen.
Well, I mean,
kitchen appliances are expensive, but...
I will start thinking about going to the bank and getting a loan for this, if this thing can devein shrimp.
Oh. And pit cherries. Throw in a cherry pitter and I'm in.
Mm.
I feel your pain. I certainly would, for me it's like the idea of cleaning fish. I can't do that, but I would buy a machine that could. So one of the things we also wanted to mention was that, robots are one thing, right? The automation of these tasks that would free up a lot of time for us so we could do something else. And for those of us who, we might enjoy cooking, but there's certain parts of cooking that we find tedious, we could give that over to the machines. But what about going a step further and having artificial intelligence inform the types of foods we prepare in the first place?
So there you mean the capacity of a chef not to do the physical act of cooking, but to come up with recipes.
Right.
Something, to invent dishes.
Exactly, to innovate, not just to follow a set of instructions, but to come up with new instructions, perhaps combinations and instructions that have never before been attempted by humans.
And never should be.
Some of which may fall into that category. So
we can talk about it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Chef Watson. So Watson, hey, we talked about Watson recently.
Yeah.
So this would be the
it's been a Watson kind of month.
It has been. Yeah. Watson, it's funny. On Forward Thinking, I've been talking all about Watson. And on Tech Stuff, I've been talking about
the Manhattan Project.
The Manhattan Project. Ooh. and post-apocalyptic technology and radiocarbon dating. So I guess I just get on a kind of a streak after a while. But with Watson, in case you don't remember, Watson's the computer developed by IBM. It played on Jeopardy and won against two returning champions.
Because humans aren't smart. No, I'm just kidding. They were very smart. But the computer had a very impressive performance.
Yeah, and it's a cognitive computer. It learns, and as it is trained – It learns how to perform certain tasks, whether it's actual physical tasks, you know, if you have a robotic component or just, you know, the process of something, better and better as you train it and tell it, yes, you've done a good job. That's exactly what we want. Or no, this is not the result we wanted. Then it can start to learn and do them more and more efficiently. So Watson's been used for all sorts of stuff. We talked about it in the tone analyzer episode. It's also been used to help with in the medical field to help lots of different processes.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, anything that you want to do that requires you to bring a whole bunch of information to the table, it's really great for.
Yeah, and it can end up kind of weighing that information and giving you at least an idea of what information seems to be the most relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously making guesses in some cases, but they're very educated guesses based upon huge volumes of information. Well, Chef Watson is using that same technology, but in the process of creating recipes. IBM calls it cognitive cooking, and it's based upon a couple of things: the historic uses of various ingredients, as well as the chemical composition of those ingredients themselves, and which chemical compositions would be most likely to complement one another.
So it is going to be learning in large part from recipes that exist.
It did, yeah. They fed it 35,000 recipes, essentially.
Along with a whole lot of information like food pairing theories and that flavor compound chemistry and just cultural taste preferences.
Right. So that way, with all that information combined, it could start coming up with really interesting recipes.
New recipes, yes.
So they showed this off. IBM showed this off in the perfect way, in my mind. They got a food truck and they sent it to South by Southwest Interactive, which makes perfect sense. That's a huge festival. A lot of influential people from various businesses are there. And what they did was they gave people the opportunity to vote on one of several different dishes that had been invented by Chef Watson. So Watson would go through its database and say, all right, well, traditionally this ingredient could be paired with this other ingredient, but I'm going to do that. And because I know that that's going to produce this one type of taste, that taste would probably go really well with this other thing that no one's ever really bothered to combine with these. And that's going to be my recipe. So attendees would end up seeing the candidates and then vote on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And essentially do a hashtag and their mm-hmm. choice. And then whichever one got the most votes would be the one that the food truck would deliver the next day. So you could go to the food truck and get a sample of that and try it out.
Now, to be clear, this food was not prepared by robots.
No. Watson was not in the food truck.
No. Watson,
well,
with
Watson,
arms.
Yeah, right.
Watson in spirit was in the food truck. Yeah. The Watson technology remained back at IBM.
Yeah.
And was connected through the cloud. The humans were actually preparing the stuff, but they were preparing the recipes based off of an artificial intelligence creation. So this was innovated by a machine, not by a human. The humans, this is kind of like the opposite of what we were just talking about, right?
Right.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Instead of the robot preparing these ingredients and making a meal, the robot came up with which ingredients you were going to use, and then you created the meal.
Yeah.
So
this is the model where you become the robot.
Yes.
And just perform out of blind faith exactly what the machine tells you to do.
Yeah. You become one of the drones in the 1984 Macintosh commercial.
Who truly is the robot.
But hey, you're a robot that gets to eat some potentially tasty and probably really weird food.
Let's talk about that.
Well, all right, let's talk about some of the examples that they came up with at the food truck. So they had stuff like Belgian bacon pudding. I don't know exactly what that was. The one that they gave the most attention to in the videos I watched was an apple kebab, Vietnamese apple kebab.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me.
It was apples and pork, which have been used quite a few times, like pork, apple sausage kind of
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And mushrooms were the other key ingredient in this, along with some other ones. And the program had identified a common flavor compound in apples and pork and calculated that if the two combined, that would make a pleasant flavor, and added the mushrooms in. And in fact, the people behind it said, this was interesting. I never would have thought to add mushrooms to this particular dish, but people seemed to react to it positively. They also had other stuff like coconut Caribbean snapper fish and chips, which I'm down with.
Yeah, that sounds great.
They had a beef burrito that contained 2 ounces of dark chocolate, Which yeah, I first reacted. That. Yeah, first my first reaction was weird, and then I thought, oh no, chicken mole.
I put a tiny amount of dark chocolate into my chili recipe.
Yeah me too.
Which
yeah.
that makes sense, you know. I end up putting in an adult beverage in my chili recipe, and it might surprise you because I don't drink adult beverages. Mm-hmm. It often means that I am left over with quite a bit of adult beverage that I need to get rid of because they don't sell it in the small amount I need.
Not usually.
No, but anyway. If you wanted to give this a try, you don't have to wait for the food truck to show up in your neighborhood. Instead, you can actually go to the website, the Chef Watson website, and you can sign in using something like a Facebook profile or the IBM ID, and you then can experiment. So it has a place where you can put in an ingredient, and you can put on, I think, up to 4 ingredients, maybe more than that. I remember seeing 4 on the screen. And you can start with just putting in a single one, and then it'll fill out the rest for you. Or you can go in and fill in, you know, no, I want these 2 paired together, and then tell me what I can make from that.
And you can also fill in things that you don't want to put in. For example, I really shouldn't have bell peppers, so I could say no bell peppers.
Yep. Yeah, and in fact, I did that as well because I thought, hey, I might actually use this in the near future, but one of the people I'll be cooking for can't have tomatoes, so I have to eliminate tomatoes from that. Otherwise, I would just have to go through recipe by recipe, you know, and that gets tedious after a while.
Yeah, yeah. IBM teamed up with Bon Appetit to create this app, and they've also published a cookbook of Watson's recipes with the Institute for Culinary Education, mm-hmm. which is the team of chefs that they work together with to develop the software in the beginning.
Recipe I want to try is called broccoli fricassee, which is pretty interesting to me. It actually sounded really appealing. It was also kind of odd because broccoli was the ingredient I put in at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I was like, tell me the kind of stuff I can make with broccoli. It filled out the other ingredients. I think it added first it added tomato, and I said, oh, no, I can't have that. I knocked it off. They replaced tomato with cauliflower.
Okay.
And then I can't remember what the other 2 ingredients that it added before. It just gave me the list of recipes. But it was funny because it was called broccoli fricassee. And then I looked at the recipe itself and I was like, oh, this does sound really good. And then it occurred to me, hey, I haven't seen broccoli yet. And it turned out that the broccoli was an optional ingredient in broccoli fricassee. And instead of using noodles, which is how the regular recipe was being presented, it said you could replace the noodles by boiling broccoli and then mashing it up and then putting the rest of the dish on top of that. That would be a base.
Hmm.
Okay. So optional broccoli fricassee.
Yeah. So fricassee, which may or may not have broccoli. So that's just one example of something odd that might happen. But that's not the strangest thing we discovered while using Chef Watson.
No, I was like, well, I'll give this a spin. Mm-hmm. I am also the cook in our household, and I feel like I have fairly decent culinary instincts, so I decided to give it a try. I was disappointed to find that you can't start with whatever ingredients you want. They're limited by stuff the database, whatever it is, already recognizes. So I tried to start with rat meat, and it just didn't know what to do with that.
Apparently you're like, hey, what if I am living in a Fallout vault, uh-huh. and I have a limited group of ingredients at my
disposal? That's exactly when something like this would be really useful.
Uh-huh. All right, well, go on.
But okay, so no rat meat recipes, but then I thought, okay, maybe mustard greens. I like mustard greens. I'll see what I can do with that. One of the top results was something called a mustard greens dumpling, like a Chinese-style dumpling with wonton wrappers.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, that sounded interesting to me. I was like, okay, I'll give it a look. And I clicked on this recipe. And I promise I wasn't doing this to be mean. I wasn't trying to make Watson cry or intentionally display its shortcoming. But I think the results were quite bizarre. So the first thing it tells you to do in the mustard greens dumpling is to fill the dumplings with a food processor minced combination of vegetables and seasonings. I quote, finely mince scotch bonnet pepper and garlic in food processor. Add okra, brine cured olives, niçoise olives, sesame oil, garlic chili sauce, and soy sauce.
Well, first of all, let me say, you can never have too much okra.
That is true.
I like okra, but I don't know what to do with the okra and okra.
You have to finely mince it. It tells you at the beginning of the sentence.
Okay.
You add in all the okra.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I also like okra a lot too, but even as a fan of okra, this sounds kind of strange to me.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm just not being open-minded enough, but based on my like human culinary instincts, a Chinese dumpling paste that is literally half by weight made up of brine cured olives, Niçoise olives, and Scotch bonnet peppers sounds absolutely disgusting.
Now, you say that, but have you tried one yet?
No, I haven't. I will say that
for those who are not familiar with Scotch bonnet peppers, they pack a bit of a punch.
Yeah, so these are going to be
hot. They're hotter than habaneros. Yeah. They're quite spicy.
Yes, these are going to be very spicy. I mean, I like spicy food. That's fine. But more than half of what makes up the filling is going to be olives.
Salty, salty olives.
And then you're going to add soy sauce to it.
Yeah. And so garlic chili sauce, which is also salty.
Let's talk about an ingredient that didn't pop up.
Oh,
yet.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I thought I was making mustard green dumplings. What happened to the mustard greens? Well, finally, I kept reading through it to find where they came in. And finally, I got to the step, pour enough water into the pot to reach depth of 1/2-inch line steamer rack with mustard greens leaves.
So, in other words, the steam is going to be passing through the mustard leaves.
Right. So if you've ever made dumplings in a steamer, yeah, it's a very common practice to lay out cabbage leaves or lettuce leaves or something in the steamer just to sit the dumplings on while they steam.
So they don't stick to it in the end. And those kind of things can impart a little bit of flavor to the dough.
So the thing that it calls mustard greens dumplings is might have a waft of mustard green.
Well, maybe,
but it has no mustard greens as an ingredient.
Maybe what this tells us is that Watson really hates mustard greens.
It could be.
I just want it to be tangentially related to the cooking process.
Also, there's another thing that kind of surprised me, which is that it said this recipe makes 36 servings when they're about 4 cups of filling, it looks like.
So an appetizer, clearly.
Yeah, okay. And if, I don't know, if the filling is mostly salty olives and soy sauce, that might be for the best. Anyway, I don't mean to rag on it too much. I mean, I think the idea of creating an AI chef is really cool, and I can actually see a recipe synthesizer being a better investment, at least in the short term, than a physical robot cook, just because of all the problems of, you know, how to navigate the kitchen and recognize ingredients and stuff, if you're talking about the physical cook. But to me, this shows the limitations of a system like this when it's trying to work with unstructured data.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I understand that the data that they fed it is, I think, somewhat structured, maybe partially structured, mm-hmm, but it seems like it could be more well-structured.
So in other words, one of the limitations you would say is that it's listed as the principal ingredient, but in truth, the mustard greens are just used to produce.
They're incidental to the recipe,
pretty much. But the AI can't tell that, right?
Right.
To the AI, that because that's involved in the process, it must therefore be as important as these other elements inside the recipe.
Yeah, so in my opinion, I would think to design like reliably good cooking instructions without a lot of human compensation, because we can look at recipes like these and say, oh, okay, I could maybe take some of the suggestions of this recipe, but, I mean, not follow it word for word, mm-hmm, because that would be insane. And, in fact, they even tell you to do that. They say, quote, these quantities and steps are ideas, but Chef Watson really needs you to use your own creativity and judgment. Let us know how to make chefs smarter. So they understand the limitations, obviously.
Right.
We're not, like, pointing out something they haven't figured out.
No. Sure.
To point out, cognitive computing, that's how cognitive computing works, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that you tell the computer, hey, I made this thing you made. It was a monstrosity, and it made me want to burn my house down.
Right.
Don't do that. Then the computer says, gotcha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good on ya. I will not do it again.
But I do think something like this could maybe work better if you start with more structured data.
Yeah. Well, personally, before we make such a bold statement as that, Joe, I think we really do have to make these and find out what happens.
Yeah, okay. So you want me to make some olive dumplings and bring them in?
Yeah, I'll try it.
I'll eat one if you bring it in.
Well, yeah. I like Scotch bonnets.
I'll bring the water.
You bring the water. Well, yeah, it's too bad we don't have like a farmer's market nearby the office, because I think that would be amazing.
Oh, man.
We could shoot a video
Where we make these olive dumplings.
Yeah, we make the Watson. We should each pick a Watson-based recipe and do a video of it and say, here's the future of recipes. I think.
Do you have any day and dates coming up? Let's work on it.
You know, I'm pretty much sold for the rest of the year, but I'm okay. But I think it actually would benefit us from doing it. I think we need to do this.
Okay.
Yeah, all right, cool.
No, I'm totally in. I mean, cause this is really fun. It's such a fun demonstration of how a tool as powerful as Watson can be used in perhaps unexpected ways.
Yes.
And you know, the application of Watson's processing power, the same application can also help us find more effective treatments for diseases or identify drugs that could be therapeutic in ways other than what they were originally developed for.
Right. Or even find potential problems of different medications interfering with one another before you actually prescribe them to a patient.
Yeah.
So incredibly powerful tool. And, you know, yes, this application we're talking about seems a little frivolous. But honestly, I'm excited by it because I love the idea that the recipe for the next amazing dish might be created by an artificial intelligence because it doesn't know that it's breaking a rule necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I don't think the mustard green dumplings one's going to be
it. Well, hey, I want to end with some good news. Now, I did find another recipe under the mustard because it gives you lots of different recipes to choose from. I found another one that was called grilled mustard greens, and it was not for grilled mustard greens. It was actually for grilled cod served on a mustard green salad, but it sounded pretty good. I was like, well, maybe I will give this a try. Cod with mustard greens. Now, the picture it had associated with it was a picture of grilled shrimp, and the first step in the cod recipe was one word. It said devein.
I think what we're going to need
don't think applies to cod.
I think at some point what we're going to have to do is create our own, like, this will probably be how the singularity actually happens, y'all. What we will do is we will create we'll cook a dish that was created by Chef Watson. Maybe if we were, you know, the Serenity Kitchen folks are located out of Atlanta. Maybe we'll use a robot to help prepare a dish that was made by a different robot. And then we'll take a picture of that and feed the picture through Google Deep Dream. And that's how the singularity happens.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
I think we've got it planned. You know. So finally, that April Fool's episode we released will become true. It'll just be a little. It'll be a little premature, is all.
We'll let you know when we're pulling the trigger.
Yeah, but no, I really do. I really am excited about trying this. Whether we do a video on it or not, I am excited about using this and seeing how it turns out. Because even if it fails, it's interesting, right? And I love, again, being a gadget guy and being the cook. This is the kind of stuff that just appeals to me all on its own. But I'm curious to hear what our listeners think. Would you guys use a robot in your kitchen, or do you think that takes the fun out of cooking? Would you follow a Chef Watson recipe, or have you? And if you have, let us know what the results were like. Chef Watson is a very easy app to use, so if you want to go out there and give it a shot and let us know your results, please do. I would love to hear it. Or, of course, if you have any suggestions for future topics, you can let us know. Send us an email. The address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com. Or drop us a line on Twitter, Google+, or Facebook. At Twitter and Google+, we are fwthinking. At Facebook, just search fwthinking in the search bar. We'll pop right up. You can leave us a message. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Vedato. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, look no further than the Marketing School podcast, hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast on Apple and number 15 on business in the United States. Now, if you want to listen to interesting conversations with operators that have been there, done that, also with other interesting guests, then listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards, like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.